sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
There's really big news to report today concerning 9/11. As you may remember, the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, which formed roughly in 2016, submitted a grand jury petition to a federal court in New York City in April of 2018, which was asking for a grand jury investigation into certain aspects of 9/11 and provided the court with evidence to support their request. And this past November, the Lawyers Committee received a response indicating that the court would proceed with a grand jury investigation in this case. Now, grand juries are done in secret, so we'll see what happens. The Lawyers Committee are hoping to be included in the grand jury proceedings, but they don't have to be invited. And we're well aware of how good our government is at cover-ups, so we'll see what happens. But it is a good step forward. It is good news, so we'll see where it goes. So to start the show today, you'll hear actor and political activist Ed Asner, a longtime advocate for 9/11 truth, talking about the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, of which he was a board member and has recently become its executive director. That will be followed by architect Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, who has worked with the Lawyers Committee extensively on the evidence, and Barbara Honegger, author, journalist, and producer of the video about the Pentagon called Behind the Smoke Curtain, and a board member of the Lawyers Committee, talking to you about this great news. So let's begin with this clip by Ed Asner.
I have important news of a promising development in the area of law and justice, and I need your help. But first, here's some background. In recent generations, very serious crimes and political scandals have occurred which have tested our judicial and law enforcement systems. Such crimes have rocked the world and have tested our values and our democracy. The United States Constitution has been a model and an inspiration for the world. It has provided noble principles which have guided and unified us for 200 years. As we've been reminded by many of our nation's leaders over the years, constant vigilance by us, the citizens of the United States, is required to protect this Constitution and our democracy. To ensure that our legal institutions operate with integrity, we need attorneys and judges to uphold the highest of legal standards. But even that is not enough. An engaged citizenry is more than just desirable. It is essential, especially in these times. But when the separate branches of government refuse to hold the others accountable, that job falls to the ultimate authority in a democracy, the people themselves. Among the most disturbing of the crimes that have tested our democracy are the horrific attacks of 9/11. 9/11 not only raised fears for our nation's safety, but has been the motivation for multiple wars with an enormous cost in human lives, with trillions of dollars spent and with no end in sight. The war on terror has been described as an endless war in which the enemy cannot even be clearly identified, let alone defeated. At the core of the war on terror is the official narrative about 9/11. The aftermath of 9/11 has brought us not only an endless string of wars, but also an unprecedented government intrusion into our privacy. As a result of 9/11, we have been living an Orwellian nightmare. Our democratic form of government and the critical checks and balances against abuse of power provided in our Constitution are at risk like never before. One would think our leaders would make every effort to solve the crimes of 9/11. But rather than enduring a full and independent investigation and adjudication of the crimes of 9/11, the official investigation has been described by astute observers as a highly orchestrated whitewash. Even commissioners who served in the official investigation complained of major roadblocks and limitations imposed on them. In plain language, there was a cover-up. Further, I'm sure you know that a necessary part of solving a crime is to examine the forensic evidence. But I bet some of you may not know that over the last 15 years, professionals in the fields of science, architecture, and engineering have accumulated a large body of forensic evidence about the crimes of 9/11 that our government has yet to acknowledge, let alone evaluate. The families of the victims and we, the American people, deserve to have this evidence examined independently and thoroughly. Let's face it, nearly 15 years have gone by, and the essential truth of 9/11 remains untold. The call for justice remains unanswered. This is why I'm here, to introduce the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, a nonprofit organization which has been formed to address this exact problem. After 2 years of analysis, strategizing, and planning, the Lawyers Committee is ready to implement a carefully planned strategy to achieve the goals of transparency and accountability for the crime of 9/11. To achieve these important goals, the Lawyers Committee has committed itself to performing a thorough and independent investigation, preparing and filing a petition for a federal grand jury, and pursuing civil lawsuits, including lawsuits under the Freedom of Information Act. Why is this so important now? Because this may be one of our last opportunities to expose the falsehoods of the official 9/11 narrative that has cost us so much in money, lives, international respect and prestige, and our constitutional rights. Just as important, this is our best chance to investigate and expose the private and illegal agenda behind the ongoing global war on terror, which began as a result of 9/11. The encouraging news is, with the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, we now have a team of experienced lawyers dedicated to pick up where previous investigations left off and do the work that I expect will have truly historic consequences. I'm pleased to announce that I proudly agreed to serve on this board of directors. The Lawyers Committee's attorneys, researchers, and investigators have been donating their time. Their new executive director is donating 12 months of his time. Now, what's required is your support right now.
And they do need our support. So go to their website and learn how you can help with this amazing new grand jury investigation. And here's Ed Asner giving you that web address.
It's lcfor911.org.
And now you'll hear from architect Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and Barbara Honegger, a member of the board for the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, discussing this new grand jury investigation into 9/11. This conversation was from an interview with Josh Sigurdin of WAM, or World Alternative Media, and has been edited for time constraints. They're responding to Josh's question concerning their thoughts on this latest amazing news about the grand jury petition. It begins with Barbara Honegger, and here she is.
It's the petition of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. And I need to say up front that we have a rule in the Lawyers Committee, I'm on the board of the Lawyers Committee, that to make any official statement on behalf of the Lawyers Committee per se, there need to be two of the attorneys from the board on the radio or television program. Mm-hmm. So I'm speaking as a private citizen, but of course I'm knowledgeable because I am on the board. So with that upfront statement, let me answer your question. So the bottom line is, people, we have had an historic breakthrough for 9/11 Truth and Justice. On November 7th, so it was a little bit ago now, and I can explain if you're interested why it took a while to get the information out to the public, which we did in the last few days. But about 3 days ago, the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry announced in official press releases, the Lawyers Committee announced that on November 7th, the Lawyers Committee received an official letter from the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. That's the federal courthouse in Manhattan that has the jurisdiction for the World Trade Center events on 9/11. And we received a letter saying, to our shock and pleasant surprise, that the U.S. Attorney would be doing as we demanded, which is to follow the law. And he cited the federal statute that they're going to follow, and that federal statute explicitly in its text requires them, and they said they would do it, to submit our grand jury petition, which is online on the Lawyers Committee website for the world to read, www.lcfor911.org, that they will be submitting our petition and the 57 evidentiary exhibits proving that the official story of what brought down World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7 on 9/11, the latter not hit by any plane whatsoever and came down in a classic controlled demolition, will be submitted to a specially convened special criminal grand jury. This is historic.
And now Barbara is asked if this grand jury investigation creates a clear path forward for the 9/11 truth movement.
Well, yes. The petition is the beginning, of course, of that clear path forward. People need to understand that this is an official action. We have moved from 9/11 forensic evidence and facts to 9/11 justice. And one of the most exciting pieces of news is that I drafted, on behalf of the Lawyers Committee, press release, 400-word press release that was put out 2 days ago in the morning, 8:30 a.m. East Coast time, by PR Newswire. And it went to all of the entire U.S. One market, which means as many as 8.5 million readers and viewers. And it's already been picked up by over 165 mainstream newspapers like the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and mainstream radio and mainstream television. And they have reposted it on their websites verbatim, including the embedded links to our petition, to our evidentiary exhibits, and to the U.S. Attorney's letter. This is official action, and they are covering it in the mainstream media.
And now here's architect Richard Gage.
Yeah, the Lawyers Committee has been doing exceptional work. They've been with us step by step, and now they're launching forward. And maybe we were carrying the burden, you know, from 2006 and 7, and then the Lawyers Committee got formed in the last several years. Of course, our petition calls for a real, unimpeachable 9/11 investigation, specifically regarding the destruction of the three World Trade Center skyscrapers. So this is music to our ears, almost unbelievable. It's a little hard to fathom it, but we're crossing our fingers and we're backing the Lawyers Committee 100%. And of course, the evidence that we've compiled over the last 12 years is getting packaged and is going to be ready to go to help this poor grand jury panel, which is going to be besieged from left and right, I'm sure.
And now they're asked, isn't this a case of the government investigating itself? And what can we expect from this grand jury investigation?
Well, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Southern Manhattan District. We don't know who is the grand jury, the members of them. There are significant examples, and Barbara can cite these, of grand juries who have done right despite the efforts to constrict their scope of review. What we know is we're going to be presenting them, and Barbara can address this too, hopefully directly, packages of evidence that are absolutely irrefutable for the explosive demolition of all three of these World Trade Center skyscrapers.
And now here's Barbara's response.
I think people need to know that the evidence is incontrovertible and that evidence is explicitly detailed and referenced with the evidentiary exhibits themselves. And we're talking about formal studies results. We're talking about academic peer-reviewed papers. We're talking about videos of the eyewitnesses. These are all amongst the 57 pieces of evidentiary information that are part of the petition. They are an official part of our grand jury petition that is going to be, they said so in the letter, they are going to be following the law. The law is very clear that all of the information that we have provided, they said in the letter they reviewed it. Let's realize the letter was signed by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, and that was a typed signature. And under that, it was actually signed, like a signature, by the Assistant U.S. Attorney for Counterterrorism and Terrorism. They have read every word of this. We have educated the U.S. Attorney and the top Assistant U.S. Attorney in Manhattan on the truth. They have just been enlightened. They're human beings. That's their town. That's their city. And they are going to be giving it to between, I think it's 18 and 23 concerned citizens, almost certainly in that city. They care about their city and they're going to care about the truth, and they will be given it and they will read it. It's the evidence that turns people around. That what they've been fighting against all these years is people who refuse to look at the evidence mostly.
And here Barbara's asked about the possibility of government whistleblowers coming forward due to this grand jury investigation.
Well, that's already happened. Look at Sybil Edmonds. We have the grand jury petitions, evidentiary exhibits, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. But we chose, of course, the ones that we thought were the best to include that, you know, hit you between the eyes like a 2x4. You can't question them. And in amongst the 57 evidentiary exhibits, which are part of the petition, there are statements and evidence from whistleblowers, unbelievable whistleblowers, from over 100 first responders, firemen, in their official statements to the fire department in New York City. There's no question once you look, and these 18 to 23 ordinary, probably New York citizens are going to see the truth. And when they see the truth, yes, I think there's more than hope. And do I think people will come out? Yes, now that it's known and it's being put out by the mainstream media, and it's growing every day, by the way, in response to our PR Newswire release just 2 days ago. This is now official news. We have a link in our press release to the actual U.S. Attorney's letter. It says it all.
And here Barbara's asked how this investigation will be different than the whole Kennedy assassination investigations.
Well, with the Kennedy assassination, we had the Zapruder film, which didn't come out for years. With 9/11, we've got how many, Richard? I think it was 82 videos of the World Trade Center collapses. I mean,
well, yeah, and we have the peer-reviewed paper from the team of 8 international scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen, which is 25 pages of irrefutable evidence that there's nanothermite chips found in all the World Trade Center samples. It should not be there. This has to be acknowledged. It's been denied but and kind of wished away by a lot of people for a long time. But here it is in the hands of jurors and, as Barbara mentioned, 165 mainstream media outlets. So something's going to happen here. People are going to be looking at this petition. They're going to be seeing this evidence, which includes the U.S. Geological Survey finding billions and billions of previously molten iron microspheres in all the World Trade Center dust samples, amounting to 10 tons of what can only be the residue of ignited thermite, which should not be there either. They have no
Talk
other...
Talk about a smoking gun. That's a thermite. It's the smoking gun.
Yeah, and people are going to be educated about the third tower, which we also call the smoking gun, World Trade Center Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that on the afternoon of 9/11, after multiple witnesses hear explosions, drops like a rock straight down uniformly, symmetrically into its own footprint in under 7 seconds, just like a controlled demolition. Whoa.
Next, Richard is asked about a Fox News host who said that World Trade Center 7 didn't come down due to controlled demolition, but was brought down because it was on a landfill, which was very shaky ground.
It is absurd, and it's the first time I've ever heard that point. These buildings were built on bedrock. Their foundations go all the way down, in the case of the Twin Towers, 7 stories through a basement to solid ground. And even NIST, the agency that was tasked by Congress to determine how and why these 3 buildings collapsed, NIST is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, they even say that the buildings were robust, that there was no problem with the shaking of their foundations, and there's no problem with the shaking of the foundation of Building 7 when the Twin Towers came down either. We can refute Fox News just by the official story itself from NIST.
Right, and also it's extremely important, and the grand jury is going to learn this very quickly as well, that the towers were actually designed and constructed by the architects and built to specifically and explicitly withstand the impact of the kinds of planes that hit them on 9/11.
The biggest planes at the time they had, which was 707s, but they traveled faster, so they had the same kinetic energy. In fact, John Skilling, who's the mentor of Leslie Robertson, said it could stand the two planes hitting it. But the problem would be that the fuel would dump into the building, but the building would still be there. It's designed to withstand even jet fuel fires.
Yeah.
And next, Barbara is answering a question about how she got into the 9/11 truth movement.
Believe it or not, at the time of, well, before 9/11, beginning in 1995, and for another 11 years after 9/11, so for over a decade and a half, I was the senior military affairs journalist at the Naval Postgraduate School here in the Monterey Peninsula of California, Central California coast, where I live. And the Naval Postgraduate School, also known as NPS, where I was the senior military journalist for all that time, is built by DOD itself, by the Department of Defense, as the Pentagon's premier science, technology, and national security affairs graduate research university. So I was a senior military affairs journalist there for over a decade and a half, for 16 years. And it was in that capacity, on the morning of 9/11, that I was not allowed in the gate. This is a military base, even though it's a military university. I was not allowed into the gate. And because I was not considered like just the very top people, the admiral and a few under him, as so-called essential personnel. And so I got to go home and watch television. And just like the event that triggered my research that resulted in my book, October Surprise, that on the true story behind the Iran side of Iran-Contra, which came out a long time ago in 1989 in May, the research for that book was triggered by a single event, which was President, then just President Reagan and Vice President George Bush, putting their hands up to take the oath of office on January 20th, 1981, and the hostages in Iran, the 52 hostages being released instantly thereafter, I knew I smelled a huge rat, and it didn't take too long for me to pull together a 76-page detailed reference timeline that formed the basis of my book, October Surprise. The same kind of thing happened on 9/11. I drove the few miles to my mother's home in Carmel, turned on the television, walked in, my brother happened to be there, and I said, you know, we're at war. And they said, what? And I said, turn on the television. And they didn't even have it on. They were talking about carpet samples. And they turned on the television, and we watched the first tower, the South Tower, fall. And, of course, there were repeats of what had happened just before that, both of the plane impacts, and they played those ad nauseum on the television. I believe I was watching ABC that morning, and instantly, just like with the taking of the oath of office and the hostages were released, I smell a rat. And from day one, in my official position, talk about somebody from in the government who's talking, that first person inside the government was me. And I never stopped. I've never stopped. And the miracle is they let me stay in my official position as that senior military affairs journalist for that top DOD university in the entire country for 11 years until I retired. And through those entire years, as Richard knows well, I was in the public space and in the government space, even though I held that job and they didn't touch me.
And here Barbara is responding to a question about the time frame for these grand jury proceedings.
Well, we don't know. But grand juries, as I recall, I should say that the law requires the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York to convene a special criminal grand jury for this specific purpose, not just take an existing, sitting, already convened criminal grand jury. So that's a process that takes time. You have to go through the voting rolls or the DMV rolls, and you have to bring in many, many more potential jurors, and you have to vet those jurors. It's a long process. It's supposed to be randomly selected. So that takes time. And then, as I understand it, criminal grand juries especially are usually convened for a pre-specified period of time. It can be a year, it can be 18 months. And now people need to understand that grand juries are secret. They do not have to tell us anything about what's happening. besides letting us know that they're going to do it, which they did in the U.S. Attorney's letter that we received on November. It was dated November 7th. We actually didn't receive it for quite a while after that, and there's a story behind that, but it's unimportant. And when we finally did receive it, and it was opened, by the way, some coffee spilled on the letter, which we had to clean up electronically to put it on the web. But it takes time. I would say probably a year and a half. But the good news is that I can't tell you what they are. But our attorneys on the Lawyers Committee Board are very, very smart. And they have been fighting the government, whistleblower attorneys, for a very long time. And we have backup plans, believe me.
And now Richard is responding to a question about why people should question the events of 9/11.
Well, we have a whole lot of evidence. Barb mentioned 57 separate points of evidence. Starting with Building 7, we have the irrefutable evidence of the controlled demolition of that building, the fact that it came down symmetrically, the fact that it came down at free fall, the fact that it came down in under 7 seconds, all indicates that all 82 columns had to have been removed simultaneously. Guess what? The official cause of that building's failure is normal office fires. Well, normal office fires have never brought down a skyscraper before 9/11. And so all of a sudden, it does exactly what a controlled demolition does. In addition, there's evidence in the dust, as we've already discussed, the molten iron microspheres, you know, the diameter of a human hair, billions of them, 10 tons of them, unexplained in the official story. The presence of nanothermite chips, again, up to 10 tons of these materials by extrapolation are found and documented in a peer-reviewed paper. As Barbara mentioned, we have the hundreds, actually now, of witnesses of explosions occurring before there was any descent of the top portion of either of the twin towers. We have the laterally freely flying structural steel sections weighing 4 tons, laterally ejected 60 miles an hour, some of them 80 miles an hour, landing up to 600 feet in every direction. That's the energy of a 200-pound cannonball shot 3 miles. And there's thousands of these, such that there's no pile at the bottom of either tower. So we have the lack of concrete floors as well, 110 of them, each an acre in size in each of the twin towers. But there's no stack of them found at the bottom of either pile, just a 3-4-story pile. Where's the concrete? It's pulverized in midair and spread in a 4-inch thick blanket over lower Manhattan, 3 square miles. So this kind of evidence goes on and on and on, and I would refer people to the YouTube video, which we've put up called 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. Just search Experts Speak Out on YouTube. You'll see all this evidence from 40 high-rise architects, structural engineers, metallurgists, chemists, physicists, controlled demolition experts. It's all there for everybody to see.
If I may add to that on one point of evidence, the one that really grabs me in addition to everything that Richard just said, and especially World Trade Center 7, which architects and engineers in our movement calls the smoking gun, there is another smoking gun, and it is featured in the grand jury petition and the evidentiary exhibits, including videos of the whistleblowers who experienced it themselves, and there are at least 2 dozen of them. And that is the fact that very few people know that we have official seismic evidence and we have expert analysis showing that of the analysis of that official seismic evidence of the seismic record of what happened at both World Trade Center towers in New York on 9/11, that there was a massive explosion in the deep basement of the first tower, World Trade Center 1, 14 seconds before the plane hit, not after. And for World Trade Center 2, there was a massive deep basement explosion in the deep basement of World Trade Center 2, 17 seconds before the plane hit that tower. Mm-hmm.
And here they're discussing the consequences of 9/11, and in this case, it's the 9/11 wars.
And those wars are still going on. Wars are still going on, and they're trying to take it to Iran.
And here's Barbara Honegger's final comment about the grand jury proceedings.
The legal rubber has just met the road.
And thanks again to Josh Sigurdin of World Alternative Media for providing that interview. And here's Ed Asner again to tell you how to reach the Lawyers Committee's website.
www.lcfor911.org. That's lcfor911.org.
This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.